What happened in Spokane with Auburn basketball? And most importantly, what do they do and where they go next? The title says it all. That's exactly what we're going to be jumping face first in the deep end on this topic for this episode of the Auburn Daily Show. It's your host, Alex, better known on socials as at Auburn Memes. You can find all my nonsense there. And of course, check out Auburn Daily at all their socials as well, the Auburn Daily, pretty much on everything. Of course, auburndaily.com to see the best and quickest and all around awesome Auburn coverage that the team there has going on. Guys, let's talk right into this. Spokane, Auburn loses a tough, heartbreaking game to Yale. And honestly, quite arguably, this might be one of the most disappointing Auburn basketball losses from an upset perspective of all time, at least in modern basketball history for sure. Just going to be frank about it, Auburn really had no business losing this game other than the fact that anybody can lose to anybody in March. But all the advanced stats of this team, you look at every single parameter, every stats nerd had Auburn up in that, what I think they called the championship bubble, depending on what kind of graphs you looked at, that had all the advanced stats, every number going to. And I think the tough part of all this is all of those teams are advancing soundly in this tournament. And I'll be frank with you. I think if Auburn plays this Yale team, they beat them 9 out of 10 times, maybe 19 out of 20 times. I say that more confidently because we saw what San Diego State did this Yale team. So before we jump right into this game, I think this is the most perfect opportunity for the most needed and topical ad read ever. Guys, that is the Opelika Rage Room. If you're in the Birmingham area, a lot of you are the Birmingham Rage Room. I want to get this cool little graphic of like a referee jersey on it for this because I think that's kind of where we're looking at here. The officiating kind of made you need a Rage Room. Some of the play from Auburn needed, made you need a Rage Room. Maybe CBM instead of taking it out on that guy needed a Rage Room. Guys, check them out. This is one of those days, you know, just picture your plate, picture your glass, picture your bottle, little referee jersey, just wham, just, you know, smash it to pieces. Rage Rooms are a blast, whether you're just looking out to have fun or maybe you just got done watching this game. You're like, hey, I don't need to think about this game. We're going to channel this anger somewhere. Check them out at their respective websites, birminghamragerum.com or opelikaragerum.com. It is great for a small party. It could be group sizes 1 through 12, any sizes larger than that. Of course, reach out to them about doing a large group outing package, which they can do for birthdays, company events, all that type stuff. They do have car smashing coming at both locations here very soon. And this is one of those games that, you know what, I probably could have smashed a car after this one. I will be perfectly honest with myself. One man junkyard wrecking crew after the frustration of that game. Check them out. Thank you. Thank them so much for sponsoring this show. And we are going to get right into it. So, Auburn versus Yale. Few things that jump out to me right out of the gate, and we're going to hit some narratives here. I went to Spokane. I was there all last week. That's why the show was a little bit sporadic getting off. I didn't have the episode content going. Obviously, Charlie Five had us locked down with the football spring practice coverage, but of course, the week before that, we're in Nashville, so we had some episodes out there, but a lot of traveling the last 10 to 14 days, so it was very tough getting it going back home for a little while, so should be a lot easier to get a lot more regular content flowing for the channel. But it was also good because we got a little bit of time here to decompress and really look at what happened, see the next round of games to kind of get a good bearing of what was going on. Because I think a too quick of a knee-jerk reaction for this game might not have been the most level-headed of content out there. And I've had kind of a few days to let this one simmer. And it doesn't feel any better, don't get me wrong. But it's still, I think we can maybe ground how we take what the next moves of this thing in a little bit more reality. So, as I said earlier, out of the gate, Auburn wins this game 9 out of 10, 19 out of 20, easily. This was an inferior opponent they lost to across the board. I think Kentucky's kind of in a similar boat, which makes this sting a little bit less. But all the same, let's jump into what some of the factors went into this. So, the biggest elephant in the room, no pun intended, was the officiating. There's no other way you can look at this. The officiating of this game was horrible. Now, before we get into you're blaming the officiating. Officiating itself is not why Auburn lost. Was officiating a factor? Absolutely. And this is what I said, and I will die on this hill. Bad officiating versus Yale team should have been the difference between a 20-point win and a 10-point win. It should not have been a 2-point loss. So we're going to get that right out of the way. It was a factor, absolutely. This game had been officiated, let's say, how the San Diego State-Yale game would have been. Auburn still wins this one. It's probably an ugly win, similar to how New Mexico State was in 2019. still get it out there, even without CBM in the game. Now, here's one that's really going to be a tough pill to swallow here. Yale versus San Diego State. The total amount of fouls called in that game for both teams combined, was less than Auburn had. Just Auburn by themselves. So, that was tough. Okay, apologies for the slight delay there. My microphone was not turned on to the right microphone, so if the audio quality has a hopefully better jump, this mic was not turned on, the computer mic was, so apologies if it sounded a little wonky there for the first time in this episode. But back to where we were. The foul calls were definitely far from... the foul discrepancy between Yale's game versus Auburn and then what they had against San Diego State was just mind-boggling. I believe Yale was in double bonus for, I think, 15 minutes nearly of both halves, which is crazy. So they just got free throws for days, 31 total. The crazy part is they only shot 67%, so they at least did Auburn a favor in the first half to let them stay in it, and they unfortunately started making them when it mattered. But it is tough. And you saw this with some Texas A&M games last season. Then really Arkansas with how Muss was the king of drawing offensive fouls. Is when games are officiated like this, I mean, a high school team could be in with a team that's a collegiate team. It slows the pace of the game down. It gives, of course, the other team plenty of opportunities for extra free throws. Gets guys in foul trouble, which messes up your rotation. So let's jump right into that. CBM goes out within the first minutes of the game. And yeah, he threw an elbow. He shouldn't have done it. Everybody knows that. Bruce Pearl said it. We're all saying it. No one's denying it. I'm sure he's very well aware. It's crazy because, yes, he did get stiff-armed right in the throat by a guy. And you can see in the replay, the referee is just staring that down. It is right in the line of sight of the referee. It had that very double dribble vibes. The ref is looking right at it. And, like, how do you miss that play and not call at the very least a common foul on that? CBM, when there's a scrum, pops an elbow back, stupid move, gets called an F2 and ejected after it's reviewed. Okay, it is what it is. But I want to challenge everybody with this. And I sent some stuff on my Twitter about this. Texas-Tennessee game, I believe like a Texas guy, Tennessee guy, one of the two, doesn't matter really for this. Straight up tackles a guy to the ground. And I think they call it like an F1. Like, grabs him, wraps him, and just heaves him to the ground for no other reason other than, like, I'm trying to throw this guy down. No, doesn't get ejected for that. I would say that was more egregiously worse than what CBM did. I mean, CBM just kind of was flailing. It wasn't like he looked at the guy and, you know, started doing an elbow out there. Like, he's in the octagon. And here we go with this guy, with that game, the Texas-Tennessee game. Straight tackles a guy, eyes on him, intent was very obvious. Nope, not a problem. And then the women's game, and I know we're stretching, but it is the game of basketball, so we'll just kind of keep it in there. Girl from Holy Cross, which is somewhat ironic here, just straight up decks Caitlin Clark in the face. I mean, it just hits her with a haymaker right in the face. And I don't even know if that was called an F1. I think that was called a common foul. Just double check that. But, I mean, that was a straight up punch. It wasn't an accidental, like, girl lifts her arm up in a fist and pushes it forward. Like, no part of basketball just casually has your arm in a fist. That is, like, the worst resting hand position in basketball. If your hand is in a fist in basketball, you're trying to punch somebody. Don't call it. And there's been a lot of other examples in this tournament of very physical plays equal to or worse than with more malicious intent than what CBM did that people were not ejected. So it leaves a few questions there. One, the obvious is that is just the worst part of collegiate basketball right now is the officiating. It's horrible. And I've said that after Auburn wins, double-digit Auburn wins. It's not a, oh, they lost, let's cry about the refs. Georgia game, they were calling Auburn's up by however many 15, 20-ish points, and they're still just calling all these little tic-tacky fouls and just stretching the game out for no other reason. So you scratch your head, what are we doing here? Okay, the game, I forget which game it was. There was another game in the season where Auburn was just up by 1,000 points, and it was still just this like horrific officiating, and they still do it. So CBM is out on a very questionable F2 call, and I hope that that is somehow submitted and reviewed, because at some point these referees have to be held accountable. It was obviously foul. It was obviously stupid for him to do. So was it a question of, was he targeted? Were the referees, I guess target is a strong word, were they alerted to, hey, this guy's a hothead, he plays very physical, he may try to get some cheap shots, don't tolerate it, was he warned prior in the game? We obviously don't know that as of right now. You can assume that, all right, hey, you have a reputation out here. And here's the thing about it. Janai had a similar problem last season. Janai would get hit for a lot of these little tic-tacky fouls. He would always be in foul trouble. He was kind of mouthing off, working to the refs, working the other team. Janai kind of had this bad boy reputation, and the refs called him for it. And you heard Bruce say it after the game in Tuscaloosa in the post game there. This is last season. You can go listen to that. Janai straightened that out this year. He would, you know, he'd still be himself, get a little of that moxie in there, but it was not to the point where it was jeopardizing the team. He had a point of development, and just know you have this reputation with the referees, with other players, that you work in the refs, work in the other team. You're going to get more calls. You're not going to have them against you. It is what it is. And you know what? He grew out of that. That was, I did not see that problem for him. He was never really in foul trouble. He wasn't mouthing off, kind of talking his smack, getting his text. And that is unfortunately, but that is something CBM assuming, and I feel pretty good about this and excited about it, will be here next year. That is a point of growth he's going to have. Like at this level, there just isn't tolerance for that. The officiating in, for collegiate basketball is just, it is what it is. You're not going to beat the system. You just have to play the game. You cannot play that type of game. And unfortunately, it came back to bite on the biggest stage. Does Auburn win if the officiating is better? Yes. Does Auburn win if CBM is in the game? Absolutely. Do they win more? Both of those are the same. Yeah. This loss was not any one thing. It was the perfect storm of everything. You had the ridiculous officiating. You had an ejection, which is, you know, a sidebar of that, with a major player that Bruce Pearl said the game plan was around that would have been an offensive and a defensive factor. And this is one that people have not talked about a lot, but I do want to mention this. And I did say it on Twitter. You missed Leor Berman here. You're missing the depth at the three, especially with CBM gone. You have a guy who keeps the rotations and the minutes at a healthy pace. Everybody's in position. Everybody knows what they do instead of guys having to play out of position or Chris Moore just getting worked to death. That could have been an absolute factor. Him being hurt here, and I want to give shout out because I think Leor's role had been very underappreciated. This would have been a game where that loss was crucial here. And who knows, the results could have been different had he been in there, because you would have had guys playing that weren't as gassed in their correct position. A lot of different things. So that just dominoes effects. It screws off everybody's position, the game plan, all the things. And then, of course, Yale shoots their brains out. This guy, how do you say this? Pulakaitis? I don't know how you maybe say that. This guard, 36 minutes, 10 of 15, 6 of 9 to 3, 28 points. Just goes absolutely freaking bananas. And then the worst part about that is, of course, against San Diego State, the guy only scores 9 points, 2 for 9 shooting. So Yale just, I mean, you know, the joke, oh, Auburn was Yale's Super Bowl. The way they played, it kind of was. They all just shoot out of their freaking minds. At very key moments, they make the key free throws. I mean, Yale came through in the clutch where Auburn didn't, where Auburn started stronger, Yale started weaker, and then the script completely flipped. It was a perfect storm. The officiating, losing CBM, the rotations, the game plan, having to adjust on the fly, Yale coming out, shooting, hitting key. I mean, the threes they hit were just monstrous. Some of these shots, just how could you defend? I forget the guy that made it where Dylan's in the dude's face. He's shooting it from the far end. I mean, there's no telling how high between the jump and the reach Dylan's hand was in the air. The guy does a fadeaway over that, like the St. Louis arch, and the thing just drops. You can't defend that shot any better. I mean, that it was just the that's what it was happening for Yale. And the crazy part about this game is Auburn's shooting percentage was okay. I mean, 51% from the field. They shot 35% from three. Free throw obviously could have a little bit better. I mean, that's kind of the name of this game. Auburn shoots three more free throws, they win. So that's a bit of a pain. But ironically, missing those free throws at the end gave Auburn a better chance to even get a chance. So it came down to the clutch. There was no clutch. Broom did fantastic, as Broom did. I mean, you really can't complain about any aspect of his game. I mean, he gets a freaking double-double, tons of points, tons of rebounds, blocks, steals. He did everything you could ask him to do. Didn't really get in foul trouble. Despite the fact of all the fouls Auburn got, which in turn, you know, we know how that story went. But it was just, I think, the volume of shots and the key shot takers there. Now, you can't talk about this without the point guards here. I mean, Aiden scoring 0 points in March is just, you can't do that. You can't do that, even in his minutes there. Trey played well. I would have liked, I mean, his percentages, especially from deep. I mean, he was 1 for 2 for 3. I don't know why you're not getting Trey more looks from three. He played 27 minutes, but only 5 points in those. Got to find a way to get him more involved. Trey, you know, don't call Mr. March for a reason. I mean, this is where he shows up. I mean, I guess you can maybe circle KD being 0 for 3, but some of those threes were kind of hock up at the end of the game or the shot clock's running out. So I'm not necessarily kind of blaming those where it just looks worse on the stat sheet than what it was. 7 points, fine. That's kind of KD's clip as of lately. Jalen with 13 was good. I would just, some of those moments, you feel like some of those more clutch moments, you're always like, ah, get the ball in his hand. I mean, Denver for 17, there you go. But I mean, really, you just got to look at the guard play and just kind of, I guess Chaney 5, you could have maybe seen a little bit more, but he only played 14 minutes. So was what it was. And just the rotation deal, it was just a perfect storm. Everything. There was not one thing that cost Auburn this game. It was across the board. The officiating, the ejection, the game plan, and then Yale just shooting out of their minds, the timing of the points. And just when it came to crunch time, Auburn letting leads get away. And of course, the fishing too, there were a lot of no calls. There was that out of bounds play that it definitely kind of looked and felt like that went out of bounds on Yale. There was one foul that a guy straight up tackles Denver Jones. No call there. Once again, this is, if this were against UConn, we'd have a different story. The bad officiating should not be a reason you lose to Yale. It was just all the things combined, and it just was what it was. Auburn goes down in a heartbreaking game, and that kind of leads us to what our next topic is going to be here. Well, I guess before we get onto that, yeah, we'll go to the SEC. We can go into that here. SEC. Starting, I think, with like 8 or 9 teams in the tournament. I think 8 was the final total. They now have Tennessee and Alabama left. And Tennessee's a good team. Don't get me wrong. Makes sense. The other teams, very, I mean, Auburn especially, head scratching. I mean, Kentucky's lost, was another historic loss to Oakland, which, I mean, was the second year in a row they've lost some game they had no two. So Cal's job is just living on a string right now, hanging by a string. Texas A&M loses one to Houston. I mean, shoot, Texas A&M, I mean, they came to play. I mean, they gave Houston all they could handle, and that's kind of seeing it. I'm like, glad we have to face them in the SEC tournament, because that one was a little bit mad because they kind of gave Auburn some trouble earlier in the season. It looked like A&M done a little better, and this is kind of a time where Buzz shows up. He has kind of missed his mark getting in the tournament at all, and I think Buzz is a decent coach. And Texas A&M is, that's never one you can overlook, especially in the setting. Now, we could talk about and argue and speculate and do all the things of Auburn being in Spokane, the seeding, the tournament, and that conversation's been had ad nauseum, and I think it's definitely worth to be said. This only, not only the screw Auburn, the screwed, it really should have screwed UConn. I'd be livid if I was UConn seeing a team that should have been seeded much higher, sitting there to 4. I mean, the fourth team in Ken Palm and other metrics sitting at a 4 seed in my, like, what are you doing? Like, we're the top seed, and this is what we, anyway. They've got to do something in the future about the conference tournaments for all teams having some real ramification for the seeding, because if not, I mean, what's even the point of the tournament? Why am I trying in the tournament other than to get a ban? If I finish runner up in the tournament and doesn't affect my seeding, what was the point? That's a problem here. And you see this because Auburn having to go to Spokane, ridiculous. The matchups that they have, crazy. And of course, you know, you have Alabama here. And it's so funny how it always seems to happen, how Alabama's road is all, oh, they made a Sweet 16, you know, 3 out of 4 or whatever. It's like they have the road paved in gold. Alabama had the easiest matchup to the Sweet 16 of any SEC team. Don't believe me. Go look at the numbers. Oh, they had to play 5-seed St. Mary's. St. Mary's is NC State and Texas Tech, better teams than St. Mary's. They play in the WCC, and you look on KenPom here, aside from St. Mary's and Gonzaga, there's only 2 WCC teams in the top 175 of KenPom. Okay? 2. Compare that to ACC and Big 12. Okay? Cake. Absolute cake. Obviously, it's so much cake, Auburn, you have to face St. Mary's, but Grand Canyon. 12 seed. So they beat a 13 seed and 12 seed, and they're 6-16. And, you know, you'd have thought by seeing that they won the Super Bowl. Super Bowl. Yes, Super Bowl. Final Four. But then you compare that where Tennessee's face off against Texas. That's a tough matchup. I mean, St. Pete's 15 seed is what it is, a 2 seed, but you have an underseeded Texas team at 7. That is not easy. And then Kentucky dropping is funny, because so they would have had NC State or Texas Tech waiting on them. That would have been a tough matchup had Kentucky had to advance further. Of course, Houston, even Nebraska for A&M, that's a tough pull. Florida had to face against a good Colorado team, ended up meeting. Of course, they had Marquette sitting right there. Auburn having to face a decent little San Diego State team to get there was not necessarily going to be a cakewalk for them either. So it's just bizarre how that always seems to keep happening. And I'm not trying to get my tinfoil hat of, oh, well, Greg Byrne did it by design, but I just have a feeling that the lowest 4 seed getting against the highest 1 seed. And then also, too, look at this from an Auburn standpoint. Auburn has to go to Spokane, and had they won, they have to go all the way to Boston. So you go from Pacific time all the way to Eastern time across the country. We have Alabama. Oh, they had to go to Spokane. But then the next game's in Los Angeles. So they just have to go probably maybe two and a half, 3 hour plane flight south. Don't know exactly how far that flight would be, but like still in the same time zone, not nowhere near as bad as going to freaking Boston. So, I mean, the seeding of this thing is kind of crazy for a lot of teams, and maybe it was just where the teams were and this and that, but it really makes you wonder. But the issue with Auburn is you lose to Yale, you kind of take away that argument. Oh, well, we got screwed going to Spokane. You can't even say that anymore because you lost to Yale. Would it have mattered where you've gone? Would you have beaten the teams? And that's an unfortunate narrative that Auburn's going to have to stare down the mirror, and they're going to live with. Now, here's the issue with Auburn. Kentucky will always get the benefit of the doubt because they're Kentucky. They lose last year. St. Peter's, embarrassingly. Man, whatever. It's Kentucky. They'll bounce back. They got the town. It's Cal. They lose this year to Oakland, and they will get the benefit of the doubt next year. If Cal and whoever's there, they will just always have that. Auburn does not have that benefit of the doubt. Out of all the SEC teams in this tournament, Auburn, I'll probably say Texas A&M might be a little bit worse than they are as far as getting the lack of the benefit of the doubt, but Auburn is definitely toward the bottom of future benefit of the doubt. So, I forget about South Carolina too. Yes, South Carolina, and they would have had Oregon and Creighton, so that was another batch of teams that would have just got a really bad pull, comparatively speaking. But it's just the way that it is. And unfortunately, when you lose games like this on the stage, like you lose it, when it comes to preseason rankings, when it comes to future seedings, whatever, everybody gets amnesia when it's Kentucky. And same deal when it's Tennessee. But they will hold this over Auburn's head. Auburn could be undefeated, and they'll put them at a 5 seed. You know, it will turn out that way. And everybody, the Yale, what they did in the round of 32, what they did in the round of 32 the time before, and all these other things. And then, of course, when they had to take the postseason ban, it's still, no one remembers that. It was just, they weren't in the tournament. And the only way to shake that monkey off your back is win these games. Unfortunately, Auburn didn't. So they can't have the narrative of, now it's probably going to be, you shouldn't even been a 4 seed to begin with, or Auburn really said we should have been high 3 seed. But I digress. You look there, you look at the path, and you kind of look at, screwed with seeding. Well, I mean, that's kind of been Auburn's deal. It's like, yes, last year they were fortunate to play in Birmingham, but you still had Houston waiting on you. So if Auburn had beaten Yale, non-ejection, done all that, we got to kind of look down the barrel here and think, would they have beaten UConn? UConn is just playing on freaking fire. They would have had to have the game of the freaking year to compete with UConn. We just got to look that down. I watched the San Diego State versus UAB game, watched it in person. I was there in the arena for it, and I think Auburn probably could have handled the San Diego State team. They should have handled business against Yale. We go back in time, you rematch, you just tap CBM, hey, just don't throw the bow, tap everybody, hey, play your better game. Auburn beats this Yale team. Hey, guys, you can get foul trouble, play accordingly. They beat them handily. They probably the game San Diego State Yale looked like what Auburn should have, and I think Auburn probably could have, but unfortunately, we will never know. But they had a gauntlet waiting for them in Boston. It stinks they didn't get their chance to play, but that is something that the staff and the players got to look down the barrel and say, hey, this is where we go. Do we have a conversation for all the SEC and think, was the SEC just down this year as a whole and just we didn't really realize it till the stage came? Were they just Were they not ready to play? Did the SEC have to travel disproportionately further than a lot of these other teams? Were they just, was it kind of like the D team beating up on the D team, which didn't, they just statistically looked better than they actually were on paper? I mean, we don't know. I mean, it's wild. There were a lot of SEC upsets that really had no business being there. And it wasn't like, in a lot of these, it weren't even like they were necessarily close losses. I mean, South Carolina got the brakes beat off of them. Florida got beat up. It was a close game, but I mean, it was a slugfest with Colorado. Really shouldn't have had any business being that close. We already talked at nauseam with Auburn. And then I guess there's one last thing I did want to bring up, the Alabama game. It's really funny because Alabama fans were going up and down a storm laughing and mocking Auburn fans for complaining about the officiating. I'm going to put my tin hat on here a little bit and quasi come to Alabama's defense here, but Auburn, very upset about the officiating, and rightfully so. And then some of the same referees that were in that Alabama Grand Canyon game, Boutnier refed Grand Canyon to a victory. And I'm going to say it, Alabama's a better team than Grand Canyon, undeniably. Why was that game as close as it was up until now, you look at the score, it didn't look that close, but that score did not narrow that gap till the end minutes of that game. Why was that a game that Grand Canyon about nearly won? Because Alabama had players foul out early, and Boutnier had everybody else in foul trouble, messed their rotation. Of course, you know, they did have, I think it was it Wright's, who got a head injury, a little possible concussion. Hope he's okay, of course. Hate to see that. Don't want to see anybody get hurt. But you have them in a similar boat of a ref show, and that Boutnier cost them the game. And it's really funny because they didn't chirp anymore about that, and it just ruins the game. Why were there so many fouls called to that game in one direction? I don't know if this is, like I said, this is the tinfoil hat here. I don't know if it is are upsets or close games better for TV watching? Like, is there some parameter there? Is it like, hey, we need it to be closer? Blowout games don't get as many eyes as an upset, draw more. I don't know how there can be just such a discrepancy for some of these games where San Diego State and Yale played in the same arena, have 24 fouls for both teams. And like I said, Auburn by themselves had 25. And I don't have the stats pulled up of Alabama and Alabama and Grand Canyon in front of me, but that game was a foul fest. So once again, going back to that, there's got to be some type of deal there because it's just taking away the real essence of what these games should be like. And if you're officiating is propelling in a tournament setting, especially if you're officiating is propelling a team, that is worse to either victory or keeping a game closer. It is not right. I think there needs to be some type of rule change to where certain things are more reviewable in tournament settings than the regular season, whether that be something to do with fouls, out of bounds calls, whatever the situation may be. There needs to be something, even the last minutes of the game, whatever, because some of this stuff is just, it's getting out of hand. And when you leave it to the split second decision without any kind of secondary deal, it ruins the essence of what a tournament should be, because a tournament should be the best team wins. Let them play it out on the court. It should not be dictated by a whistle. And yes, that's not the Auburn side complaining. This is very much Alabama was almost in that exact same boat. So as funny as it is, we're kind of coming to each other's aid. Now, they did come out on top because, unlike Auburn, Alabama played much better defensively than they really had throughout the season. So once again, going back to the deal of, had Alabama had a few other struggles, the officiating would have pushed that to a loss. Similar boat with Auburn. Auburn did not step up in all the parameters to where they let that officiating be too much of a dictating factor. Now, if Alabama had played poor defense like they had through a lot of the season, guess what? That officiating might have been the differentiating factor. Fortunately for them, they did not. And unfortunately for Auburn, they didn't do the thing there. So that's kind of how the cookie crumbled there. You hate to see it. And there's kind of getting to be a bad narrative out there. And I think a lot of people are getting this out of frustration. So I do want to kind of say this and get to our last topic here. Is what is next for Auburn basketball? Well, there's a reputation coming up right now. And that is what can they do when the stage is set? And it really sours the taste of a really good season. I mean, Auburn won 27 games this season. That is not something to be taken lightly. And I don't want people to get their expectations and their heads stuck in the clouds to where – you don't have that Kentucky mindset to where all that stuff doesn't matter, because that stuff absolutely matters. You came second in the SEC. You were right to the hunt of the SEC till the very end, regular season, and you win the SEC tournament. You have some big wins in there. You have an impressive roster, and these guys worked way too hard not to be happy and hang the hat on the season that they did. So before we get too far into this last topic of the show, I do want to take a moment to do a quick ad read for the sponsors. Plains Coffee. Guys, if you're watching me on YouTube, you're probably like, dang, things look pretty rough today. You know why it's rough? Because I take a 5 a.m. all-nighter flight home from Spokane yesterday, and I am exhausted. Did not sleep the night before. Crashed in an airport. Pretty brutal. Trying to catch up on sleep right now. I look rough. Why I'm looking rough? Because I have not had my Plains Coffee. The cool part about Plains Coffee is, let's just say I had needed it and decided, you know what? I'm getting my Plains Coffee shipped to Spokane. They can do that. I can also use the promo code for 10% off to get it cheaper. It will be ground within 24 hours of shipping, freshly ground. It would make it all the way to Spokane if I wanted it to. Now, I'm out of there. I don't want it there. I need it here. Maybe ordering some probably right when we conclude this episode, because the lack of sleep and the travel is really catching up with me. But I guarantee you, if I had it right now, I'd be glowing. I'd look like $1 million. It would be incredible. I need it. So the sad reason is almost more for myself than any of you guys. But check them out. Tons of awesome flavors. And of course, they have teas as well. If coffee's not your thing, tastes great. Fresh ingredients, all things. Check them out at plainscoffee.com. That's where you can go make your order, ship right to your house, work, wherever you want it. Comes fresh. All right. Well, what is next for Auburn basketball? Let's jump right into that. So as I mentioned here, the season, it's a lot to hang up on. It is. I think hang your hat on, is that the expression I'm saying there? The team did very well. They finished 13-5 in conference, 27-8 overall, which is the best overall record in the SEC as of right now. Obviously, I guess Tennessee and Alabama could, I don't know if Alabama can eclipse it even if they won out, but Tennessee can. So on paper, we don't look at this season and say, oh, this is a bust. It stinks when you have a really bad taste to end it, but you cannot let that take away from winning the SEC tournament, coming in second in the SEC, and having a very impressive year overall. Well, where does this leave us for next year? That's going to be the big question. What does this team do moving forward? How do they respond? Well, as I said, when the stage is biggest, that's just something Bruce and the coach has got to get going. You can't do this again. You can't be around first round or round of 32 bounce. Short of if you're playing well enough in the regular season, you shouldn't have a situation where you're facing a team in the round of 32 that's a super high seed that would potentially have the ability to bounce you, and you hope you don't get matched up again where you're a high seed and you got underseeded than where you should have been, potentially matching up with the top overall seed in the country. So we hope that sort of stuff doesn't happen. And you hope, generally speaking, you don't have to go all the way, the furthest possible location away to play. Now, if you look at where all the games are next year for March Madness, this, no matter how it falls, should be much more favorable for Auburn. So let's just hope they somehow don't get stuck in freaking Seattle, which is a potential site location. So that'll be something we have to just wait and see then. But it's a much more favorable centrally or East Coast more locations. It was tough. Spokane was probably one of the worst draws they could have gotten for a lot of different reasons. Now, I will say this. The arena itself was nice, and the staff and the volunteers who ran it were incredible. They did a fantastic job. So it was run very well. No complaints there. So let's get back to what they got to do. Well, the biggest elephant in the room, the most immediate change, is what they're going to do about this roster. There are a lot of potential moves. I think there's some COVID years at play here. There's transfers in and outs. And I'm going to say this on the record now. We'll talk about this more extensively, and I'm sure the team and the coaches are working right with this as we speak. Nothing would surprise me. I think the only players that are on this team that I feel like are as close to locks will be coming back next year as you could possibly be, this is all speculatory, would be Denver, Chaney, and CBM, just because they all transferred in. Any of these people who are bashing CBM, wanting him to get out of here with that, that he could very easily be the best team on the player. Best player on the team next year. He was one of the best this year. Just get out of here with that nonsense. He made one dumb mistake and got just the bad coin flip of a referee's opinion of what happened. He can grow out of that stuff. I'm sure he will grow out of it. He made a mistake. He loves the team. Don't just that. When there's no room for that sort of nonsense. If you're anybody saying it, just shut him up. He made a dumb mistake. It was very costly. But that Auburn, if it's against UConn, you get a different conversation. Auburn should not have needed CBM to beat Yale. We're just going to be very blunt there. So, enough of that. For anybody who's saying it, I've seen a little too much of that. Hopefully, just knee-jerk reaction. You've slept off that kind of crap. The question is, does Broom go pro? Who ends up knowing? Is there a possibility that some things can work out with NIL? There's no G League. Obviously, Broom's the best player on this team. He improved year over year. I think there's even room. He got better as the year went on, especially with his deep ball shooting. I mean, he's a 35.4% three-point shooter. Like, don't look at what it was last year. You know what? I will, just to give everybody perspective here. Last year, he was 29%. So, he was improving. In a lot of stats, he was improving. Jani's best player on this team. Jalen, of course, does have to go. There's no more eligibility for Jalen. Love it. I made the joke, and I will still joke this. Like, the one game he missed, he should have got a medical red shirt. We get him back. I mean, I will miss it. And you hate this most for him. This is not how Jalen wanted to go out for all that he gave to Auburn, winning his player in history. You hate it. I already went over CBM in Denver. I think they're probably the safest to say that they say. Now, with transfer portals, nobody's safe. We'll just kind of loop Aiden and Trey together. Don't know what they're going to do. I don't like speculating too much on this early. And there's nobody on this team, and I will never say this. I will never say this at any point, but I'm never like, oh, I wish this guy would leave. You don't ever say that. But with the way the portal works, you never know. Do guys say, oh, well, I get more minutes here. Will I be used differently here? Whatever. With Pettiford coming in, do they potentially go after a veteran guard? I mean, with the way the portal is right now, there is no telling what can happen. I'm never going to say, oh, let him go. You know, we have him back. Lior obviously will have to leave as well, so there'll be that scholarship. But is there a potential that one or both could leave? I think absolutely. If you go look at the twos, I mean, does KD say, hey, you know what, I'm hanging up basketball, I've been playing this for a while? Or does he say, you know what, I got one more year left, I'm going to go to a school where I can get a little bit more minutes and just kind of tap off my career? I don't know. Don't know what KD does. KD's a menace on defense. I think we kind of see what he is on offense. He definitely matured his game from this season to the season before. I'm not ever going to say all this team is better off with KD gone. Would never say it, but who knows what he wants to do. Similar deals with Dylan. I mean, a lot of these guys that could come back are potentially using COVID years. So are they just, you know, I've been doing this for a while. My body's beat up. I have other just life aspirations. Do they take their chance transferring? Do they want to go play overseas? Do they just want to start their careers, whatever they're doing after basketball? We don't know. I'm never going to say, oh, you know, we'd be better. You don't ever want to say, oh, we can upgrade with this person gone. Just trust coaches. I think Chris Moore also has a COVID year left. Similar conversation with him. I think Lior is gone. And after that, you know, you get your walk-on guys from there. So you got Howard coming in and Pettiford, how they'll be used, or do some of the guys stay on the team? Do they potentially kind of move positions around? There is so – probably this year more than any year, there's just so many different roster possibilities of who you could bring in, who you could move, who could come, who could go. I think every year you always have a transfer, so I think you can assume there's at least going to be one at minimum. I don't think Auburn's had a year in the modern transfer portal where somebody hasn't left, so I think just due to the odds are it's going to be somebody, or maybe like a senior leaving that could have stayed type situation. I mean, you obviously saw what happened with Stretch. He wanted to go get a little bit more playing time somewhere else, even a smaller school, just because he loves basketball. And Stretch has been killing it. He had been following what he's been doing. So we don't know what any of the guys will do. Obviously, whatever they do, whatever Auburn do, we just hope it's best for all parties involved. And then as far as the portal, do they try to bring in certain guys, certain positions, veteran, young guys? And we don't know. And this will be the conversation for the upcoming weeks. And it's going to be fascinating because, you know, I think your biggest elephant in the room is, does Jani stay or does Jani go? Because I think if he stays, you build the team around him. And I think averaging 16.5 points a game, and obviously in big games, he would easily get well in the 20s. I mean, he had ice water through his veins. No stage was too big for him. But if Jani leaves, then I think you have a completely different situation of how you build this roster. And I think that can completely dictate how you change if you do need to go out in the portal and recruit some guys there. So I think everything just starts with whatever Janai does and goes down from there. Because, of course, you know, he does have the eligibility, but I think he also has plenty of the tangibles to go to pro. But if the G League, because obviously there's all the G League, if the G League was still around, I feel like that may be the move. Because, like I said, if he doesn't necessarily make an NBA roster, he still makes some pretty good money doing that. Maybe he could make an NBA roster. I'm not a scout, so I'm not going to say what he will or won't do in a pro. Or does he make a bank playing overseas, which those guys that play overseas still make really good money. So we'll see what it is. But I think that's going to be probably the biggest decision. Now, would I be thrilled if he came back? Absolutely. I think Janai Broom, you have to make the argument for potentially being one of the best bigs ever at Auburn. I would at this point quite possibly take him over Walker Kessler. Now, Walker Kessler is the better NBA prospect, but if you just look at all around what he can do, it is tough to not really, you know, look at him there. Walker, I think, nearly doubled the blocks per game, and that was just Walker's thing. But Janai getting the points and just the versatility and how he's able to kind of put his team on the back, you know, it's crazy that there's even an argument. The fact that how big the shoes were that Walker left, that Janai could fill those, it's a really good problem to have for Auburn. I don't know if you're going to catch lightning in a bottle for a third time. So I just don't feel like replacing Janai, being one of the best bigs in the nation, is – this is no offense to the next guy if he were to leave. I just don't know if you're going to be able to have that kind of production again, which at that point means you're probably restructuring the makeup of your roster to run through different guys, and we don't even know who those guys may be. But Bruce Pearl has raised the floor of this program so high that the tournament just is just at this point, it's just almost automatically assumed. And that is just absolutely crazy to think that, like, compared to where Auburn had been in the past, to where it's just like, okay, the floor is a tournament. We got to get going. How far will you be? That's the question. And what's wild there is just as a young basketball fan growing up in middle school, doing my brackets, even elementary school, like, I'll just be thinking, like, man, it'd be so cool if, like, Auburn were in this, because it was just like that just wasn't the thing. I think the last time as a kid Auburn would have been in the tournament would have been 2000. I'd have been about 8, probably just a little too young to kind of comprehend what the tournament was. Just wasn't, you know, I knew college basketball existed, but just still a little too young to, like, get into it at that level. And then I think they made it in 2003. I do have some kind of memories of that, but I still, like, I think around 2004 is when I started really doing a little bit more. That's when it was like every year we'd be doing a bracket. I probably guess I did one in 2003, but it was very passive. That was kind of like right when I started following college basketball a little bit closer. But then from there, you have a gap. So you had a 3-year stretch of 3-year stretch. The most consecutive tournament appearances they had, 84, 85, 86. So 3-year. Or 87, sorry. So 84, 5, 6, 7, you have 4-year stretch. 88, 5-year stretch. Here you have 18, 19. They would have made it in 20, so I'll count it. And I will say in 2021, had you not had the postseason ban, you not had Sharif Hurd, you probably, or I said Hurd. What am I talking about? Sharif unrightfully banned from playing, having to sit out from the NCAA's crap. You'd have made it then, 22. 23, 24. So if you didn't have COVID and you didn't have that ridiculous postseason ban / the Sharif Cooper situation, which is even more ridiculous than that, Auburn probably does legitimately have 7 tournament appearances in a row. If you don't count that, you have 22, you have 3 in a row with COVID, because they would have made it during COVID. They probably would have been a 2 seed. Which I think it's ridiculous they didn't at least put out the, hey, we're canceling the tournament, here's the teams that would have made it, just for the credit of it, which still kind of irks me this day. But if you do count COVID and you do count the postseason ban, 22, 23, 24, and very likely be 25, they're on a stretch of just, that's when they're making it. That's what they'll do. So that is the floor of where it is. You make the tournament. But you can't just rest at the floor here. And it's an incredible floor that Bruce Pearl has done that as consistently. Not a lot of teams can say that. Auburn has never been able to say that throughout its history. You had a good stretch in the late 80s. You had a little flash in the 99 through the early 2000s. and a little flash. And then from here on out, you have established this is the program we are. This is no flash in the pan situation. Now I think the next move there is saying, okay, we have to make the runs. It can't just be, we're riding the Final Four run to the sunset. There's got to be Sweet 16s, Elite 8s, and God willing, another Final Four. But I mean, I think consistently there's got to be Sweet 16s and Elite 8s in there. Get a few more of those. Final Four is just the run. You can't really say, oh, that's a – Kentucky looks like idiots for saying that. Oh, you know, we're Final Four. We don't care about this stuff. You know, the mocking the SEC tournament just to do what they did. Like, you don't want to have that kind of mindset. But you do need to have the floor raise, and you do need to understand what happens in the regular season can dictate those matchups to get you more favorable there, and just understand that Auburn may not be getting the benefit of the doubt that other teams get as far as seeding and whatnot goes. But here's the thing about it. You can argue, oh, they've been screwed here or there, but you know what? They had one of the worst draws ever in 2019, and that was the best run they've ever had. So that can't be the excuse. You've got to rise to the occasion, do it when the stage is biggest. And that, I think, is going to be to conclude the what's next for this basketball team, is that's what they've got to do. When the stage is at its biggest, they've got to rise to the occasion. Because for some of these regular season games that they've even had in the past few years, where they had a chance to get a just national groundbreaking upset, they didn't. As much as I hate to say it, they had Baylor this year, they lost that one. Last year, they had the game. I don't think they actually had a super hard. Yeah, they didn't actually have like a super hard game. I mean, I guess the best team they would have played would have been like Memphis. But the year before that, they had UConn. And that wasn't as good of a UConn team as it was now. Lost that one in overtime. It's actually, I still think to this day, Katie Johnson's best game at Auburn. It was just kind of crazy. Year before that, they played Gonzaga. Lost that one. And then one of those years in here, I think, too. Let me go back. When was that one? Was that 21-22? I think they had the game. There was one, too, where they had a game against a really good Baylor team. Where am I missing that one here? At Gonzaga, I know. And then in 19 and 20, they played, I believe they played Duke. Or no, sorry, 19 and 20. Sorry, guys, I'm rambling looking this live. It was the 18-19 team played Duke in the regular season. And lost a fairly closest game there. And there was another game I think they had the matchup, and they played against Baylor. And I'm losing that year here. I don't want to get too much time here. But regardless, anything that I'm trying to get at here, and this is something I think this team has to do, it was 2021. They played Baylor and lost another close game there. But what this team has to do is when they do have these non-conference matchups in the regular season, whether it be a mid-conference challenge or mid-conference play challenge for out of conference, or they have them in the earlier part of the year, Auburn's got to start winning those games, especially when it's like they played Indiana, but it didn't matter if it's a good Indiana team. When they do play like the Gonzaga in 2021, where Gonzaga is ranked number one, when they do play the Baylors and the twice that they play them in recent years, when they do face off against the UConns, when you're facing against off these ranked historic programs that are good, or I would say historic, it's not an all-star, but current historic and or currently strong teams, they've got to start showing up to those games. And that's, they're playing a lot of good tournament teams and they're playing them well, like the five seeds and below. But when you're playing in the regular season, those teams that are going to be non-SEC teams that are going to be four seeds or above in the tournament, when you start beating those teams more regularly, when those matchups do come up. I don't have the schedule for next year in front of me. We'll talk about it when it's released. Like I said, they had a chance. They kind of blew it. It's game one. It was in South Dakota, was what it was. But like, they could have had, it just made a huge statement win if they come out beating that Baylor game. You just kind of lump that up with some of those quad ones. Like, Auburn has done great about not losing the quad three and four games and not losing a ton of quad twos, but getting more of those quad one wins when they count, because at the end of the day, like, that's what's going to get the seeding higher. That's what it's all about. I mean, Bruce Pearl says that. So it's been a longer episode. Wanted to kind of talk about all this. We'll be back more talking basketball as it comes up, probably as guys come and as guys go. But wanted to kind of recap all this. If you were able to tune in for this whole episode, I thank you for doing it. I know it was a very long monologue. Kind of had a lot to say with all this. Like I said, glad took a little bit of time off to let all the emotions and thoughts of the tournament decompress. It still stinks. This team, I think, had so much more on the table. I mean, you just look at where they were with all the advanced stats and for them to end it here. But here's the deal about it. What matters is how they respond. Because this isn't a team of destiny. They will be back. And that's what counts the most is what do they do to be back and come back even stronger and come back with a vengeance. And I have no doubt that this staff and this coach will do it. I hope they get the resources to do it, whether that be with through NIL, getting that practice facility built, whatever they need. We as fans have a chance more to impact that now more than we ever have. Like I said, donating to the collective, and you can select to basketball. And they can use that money to help bolster a roster, help give guys that come to Auburn more incentive to be financially backed, and that's just the name of the game now. So subtle plug on to Victory if anybody's listening and say, hey, you know what? I think I can be a part of helping this team grow. Go out, contact on to Victory, talk about a donation, and just make sure, hey, you know, I want this to be allotted to men's basketball. I don't want to shout out men's without forgetting about women's. They made it to the tournament. First time since 2019 for them. Coach Jay's building a strong thing there too. And guess what? Got a little bit to give. They need some resources as well. Don't want to take anything away from their season for where they had started and what Coach Jay's been rebuilding. So really excited to see both sides of basketball at Auburn striving and building to hit new heights, raising their floors to, in Coach Jay's case, building that floor up, and in men's case, just keeping it to where it has been raised. So next thing to do is just crash the ceilings, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in this episode. Like I said, check out all the stuff Auburn Daily's done. Like, subscribe, do all the things. You guys have a good rest of the day. We'll be back at you soon. Tune into tomorrow's episode. Charlie 5 will be dropping the heat with the Top Button podcast with probably all the latest that's been happening with spring practice. So don't miss that. So you will still be up to date with all the latest and greatest that's happening there. Guys, thank you for tuning in. Have a good rest of your day.